Well, hey there, everybody. Welcome to the, today would be the February 7th, 2023 edition of Cambridge Inside Out. I'm Robert Winters. And normally I would always like to have another person on here with me, whether it be Judy Nathans, Susanna Sagat, or Patrick Barrett. It would appear that today it's going to just be me. So I hope people are okay with that. So I'd like to begin just by mentioning a few things of some significance that have been happening very much lately. One thing I wanted to maybe speak to like right away is, and I'm going to share the screen here just to talk a little bit about this right here, was that February is Black History Month, and our former mayor and beloved city councilor, Denise Simmons, has been working pretty hard for some time trying to establish a Cambridge history, or a Cambridge Museum of History and Culture. And one of the events that they had on Saturday is like the afternoon after the brutal cold night was something they call the Black History Stroll for the year 2023 that they hosted down at the Kendall Center Public Lobby, which is the kind of a new thing as part of that whole Google reconstruction that they did down in the heart of Kendall Square. And it was particularly delightful, I have to say, going there, not only because I got to mix it up with a lot of good friends, which is always a lot of fun, but also it was extremely interesting. You know, there were some particular people, and we even got our little gift when we left, which were replicas of some of the posters. There were about 17 individuals and institutions that were recognized in there. I urge people to find out more about it because their website, and actually the page that I'm displaying here even has links in it, to the website for the Cambridge Museum of History and Culture, as well as the specific stroll that I was on. So what I'd like to, you know, just as an illustration, one of the great delights about this was that, you know, part of the posters that were actually given out, there was one that featuring my former neighbor, Floyd Freeman, who passed away a few years back, but definitely one of my favorite neighbors of all time. As well as his wife, Alice Freeman, who was an extraordinary person in her own right. I'll just mention, just because it was actually good, it was news to Mayor Simmons when I told her about this. It was there was an organization, it was called the Women's Service Union, or I could have that just a little bit wrong, but it was basically an organization that Alice Freeman was very involved in. What they did is they assisted Black women coming from the Southern states, getting them situated up here in and around Massachusetts and elsewhere by getting them, you know, work. Back then, you know, it was one of the the jobs was available as domestics. So they basically got people situated, found them housing, did a tremendous amount of work. And, you know, helping people when they were getting relocated up here to this area. And she was an incredibly vital person, and it was so delightful to see that she was one of the honorees there. There's a really great video that was produced by, I think it was in Boston, I'm not sure now. I think I saw it on Public Access TV, probably originally it was rebroadcast on CCTV by a fellow named Rudy Hippolyte, that was all about this organization, the Women's Service Club, was the name of the organization. You know, so anyway, that I believe the display is on display down there at the Kendall Center public space. You may also want to go up to the main library where there's a really really nice exhibit as well. You know, honoring Black History Month. And, I'll say one other thing on this, which was that it was what you could call her the featured speaker, in addition to the one and only Marvin Gilmore, who was great as always. Somebody named Dr. Cheryl Townsend Gilkes, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly, who really, really encouraged everybody to learn about their own personal history, said something that really sort of resonated with me. Said, you know, if your father, for example, worked for the city, don't just say he worked for the city. Ask what he did for the city. Tell the story. You know, basically, you know, the stories of everybody, not just famous people, really are part of Cambridge history or the history of wherever you happen to be. You know, so I actually found this to be a rather inspirational event while I was there. Now, on the other side, and again, I will also do a little share screen to highlight something else, which was a really, really significant passing, which is Alice Wolfe. Alice Wolfe, who was city councilor, mayor, state representative, school committee member, really one of the major figures in really 20th century Cambridge political life, passed away on Thursday, January 26th, of leukemia at the ripe age of 89. And I found myself, when I first heard the news, just sort of scrambling because, you know, those of us who follow civic and political matters, we cross paths a lot. I've been a co-panelist with Alice Wolfe on at least two occasions, talking about, elections, political matters and whatever, going back to like the early 1990s. So, I just happened to dig out some photos. One was taken, I believe, at an Earth Day event in 1990 of Alice Wolfe and Evelyn Murphy. And another one when we actually went on a tour of the what was later become the North Point area. Back then it was just an abandoned, but it was a sort of railroad yards, warehouses, and dirt, rubbish transfer stations and things like that. We went on a tour there. At the time, the big issue was what we called Scheme Z, which was actually part of essentially the Big Dig project, took photos, and it's interesting. You don't think too much about the photos until many years later when a significant person passes away, and then you find yourself just glad that you were able to take the photos at the time. Alice's story is an amazing story. She originally born in Vienna in 1933, and was there for when the Nazis came to power. Her family escaped. Eventually she made it here. And one of the things that I didn't actually know until leave this the share for a moment here, was that she actually worked at Draper Labs, and she was basically a tech person, really doing like research work, So before she, and then she did some work in management, and then eventually ran for school committee, served there for, I believe, 5 terms. And then originally tried to go to city council, but it was a year, she had a huge vote total in her last year on the school committee, and said, I can run for city council. But it was a year where all the incumbents were running. And I think, as anyone in political life knows, that running incumbents out of town is not the easiest thing to do. So she actually, that's the one time she lost an election. Was when her first attempt at running for city council in 1982. She was actually first elected to the school committee in 1973 and was elected through 1979. She ran unsuccessfully for city council in 1981, but then afterwards, so she was actually 4 terms on the school committee. She successfully ran for city council in 1983 and all the way through the election in 1991. Her vote total actually in the 1991 election, she went out on top, was pretty much close to the record high in terms of, basically we say in PR elections, double quota. I mean, she was an amazingly popular political figure. So anyway, farewell Alice Wolfe, really one of the greats. And I think it's also worth noting that, she was just a couple of years ago, we lost both Frank Duhay and Barbara Ackerman, who were former mayors. And just a month ago, we lost Sheila Russell and now Alice Wolfe. So, I guess really, as people like to say, the sort of end of an era in a way, you know, turning of a page on the other hand as well. So anyway, I think that was, you know, really significant in every imaginable way. Now back to some of the sort of more current sort of political fervor. I was, you know, so today's a Tuesday. Yesterday was a Monday city council meeting, and it was now the second meeting in a row that was, it was second regular meeting of the Cambridge City Council that was basically disrupted by a group called the Party for Socialism and Liberation, who are utilizing the tragedy of a death of a 20-year-old gentleman in Cambridgeport, in a police interaction. Basically it's starting to look as though for the foreseeable future, every time the Cambridge City Council tries to meet in a live meeting, this group will likely be there to shut the meeting down and then force them, unfortunately, to then reconvene in Zoom, you know. And, you know, again, for those of us who actually prefer to be at public meetings in person, we basically get denied the opportunity because there's a group of people basically just not going to let it happen. And there's apparently no political will to basically intervene in order to, you know, basically keep them out of the chamber from doing their, what they're going to do. In a way, it's becoming almost a routine, though, which is sad to say. From my point of view, the previous meeting, which was held on January 23rd, was actually more problematic because in that one, there was nothing on the agenda having to do with police or anything, really. So this particular group of people, I was there in person, and I was kind of curious, like, why seem to be a lot of people who are just sitting here? Are they visitors? What's going on? And they just kept quiet until the public comment period was completely over, and then they unfurled a banner, stood up, and basically just started chanting, you know, and release the name of the officer who was involved in the shooting, and just we're not going to compromise at all, and it got pretty ugly. I got pretty angry, and I'll be very upfront about that, because one of our Cambridge City Councilors, who happens to be chair of the Public Safety Committee, is Quentin Zondervan, and his aide chose to then join ranks with the protesters. Now, again, free speech is one thing, but, you know, I like to say is in a sort of a mild analogy, I mean, I teach mathematics, but if I were to get up in front of my classroom and abuse my position as the professor and then start spouting my political points of view and whatever, people would say, you know, you can't do that, Robert. That's just not exactly right. And in our particular context here, where you have one city councilor, chair of the Public Safety Committee, basically, assisting in the shutting down of a city council meeting, I don't think his colleagues were particularly pleased about this. But also joining in as they were referring to our police commissioner as a murderer, you know, heaping all sorts of abuse. You know, now I don't think it's necessarily a violation of the charter, but, you know, there is a provision in the charter that basically says if you're an elected city councilor, you actually have less right than a private citizen to basically pressure a city employee or certainly a city department head. So when you're joining with a bunch of protesters making demands of the police commissioner, maybe a violation, but certainly not what I would call good protocol, you know. But it was Mayor Siddiqui who appointed this gentleman as chair of the Public Safety Committee. I think that was a grave error, which could still be corrected. I would love to see it corrected. But anyway, it was, that was primarily the January 23rd meeting. Now, at the at last night's meeting, there were, as you would well expect, there were a number of agenda items that did have to do with police procedures, police equipment, and whatever. most of which were really good and proper. You know, I for example, there has been a call for body worn cameras for police, something that the police do not object to, nor does the police commissioner, police union, people say we're okay with that. Ironically, the one group of individuals who seem to be have a problem with this were the protesters. You know, I have a little hard time understanding that quite personally. And it was interesting that when there was a vote taken to basically pursue a policy that the Cambridge Police Department would been, you know, police officers would use, you know, get, they would acquire body cameras. The one dissenting vote against it was Quentin Zondervan, the chair of the Public Safety Committee, who also took the opportunity to make it clear that he didn't want to see any more resources expended toward the Cambridge Police Department whatsoever. Now, if I was a member of the Cambridge Police Department and I was called to, you know, if I had to perhaps participate in a Public Safety Committee meeting with a chair who is as openly hostile to the department, I think I would have some misgivings about even showing up, quite honestly. So anyway, I think this is a problem, and it's a problem that could be corrected and should be corrected, but I seriously doubt whether it will be corrected. There were some new revelations I didn't even know about, is that the Police Review and Advisory Board was actually obliged to be issuing reports, you know, and communicating them, I believe, to the City Council, which hadn't actually been done, but it's not the only thing that should be going on that hasn't been done in the history of the city. But so anyway, there was a big gigantic load of these reports were made available to the City Council at this meeting. So anyway, maybe that's enough on the police related matters. I think there was one other thing that was potentially controversial that was actually made subject to the charter right. So it was one City Council order that basically called, again, because this happened a few years ago, called for basically passing the notion of traffic enforcement toward some other mechanism other than actually having police pull over vehicles. Now, considering some of what has actually been found when police have pulled over vehicles, some significance, I don't know that this would be such a good thing to pass to another agency or other individuals. I think at some point somebody suggested, I don't even remember now. But anyway, this was made subject. There were at least two city councilors ready to exercise their charter right to say, not so fast. And that was another part of happened at the meeting last night. In non-police related matters, I just want to say that there were a number of kind of ideas and potential programs that have been floating around for a while. One thing we actually have, and we're actually those of us who buy our electricity through the Cambridge's Municipal Aggregation Program or whatever it's called, we're actually getting a nice bargain right now compared to Eversource straight electrical costs, which really shot up this season. So we're actually getting a bit of a bargain, but apparently you do have an option if you want to buy the 100% green, meaning all, you know, at least clerically all attributable to renewable resources, and you pay a little bit of a premium, but even that premium is still cheaper than what the Eversource is charging right now. One of the things I did find interesting, because I think it's a bit telling, there was a City Council order sponsored by Councillors Nolan, Zondervan, Siddiqui, and Mallon, making reference to what they referred to as the next iteration of the Cambridge Community Electricity Aggregation Program, and within the order making some suggestions. Now, I don't know how people feel about this, but basically what they were suggesting should happen is that the right now, you know, if you just sign on for electricity in Cambridge, you by default go to the regular Cambridge program, but you don't go by default to the 100% renewable, but you can choose to pay a little bit of a premium to do that if you wish. They want to change it so that by default, you have to get the 100% renewable, and then you have to go out of your way if you want to pay the lower price. Now, I don't know how everybody feels about mandates versus choice. I tend to be more pro-choice, quite honestly. So that for me, my choice would probably be to just go for the least expensive one, which maybe make me a little bit less righteous than some folks would love, but that's just the way I'm inclined to go. But apparently we have some city councilors who would prefer to impose the righteousness upon you and then ask you to opt out if you so choose. So anyway, I find these kinds of things interesting only because there has been a bit of a trend toward city council imposition of standards, and you know, so that you don't necessarily get a choice, whether it's my choice to remove a tree on my property. You know, they say, well, no, Robert, you can't do that. You know, we'll decide that for you. And in the perhaps more subtle ways, even my choice of transportation, we have a city council which is, at every possible turn is trying to make it harder for you to do certain things and easier to do other things. And make no bones about the fact that their goal is pretty much to say, if you drive a car, we don't want you to be doing that down the road, you know, pardon the pun there. Those of us who do not drive excessively, but we do appreciate having it, I certainly am always on the lookout for, well, what are they going to do next to make it harder for me, you know, but that's who we have. So now, another thing that was, I think, kind of interesting is there's been some zoning related things that have been in the offing lately. A city council originated petition that called for restricting labs from major squares and actually really most of the city except some industrial zones, which was referred to a committee, but then Mr. Zondervan basically pulled together people who then put a citizens petition more or less doing the same thing. So there's been a bit of a controversy because of the way he tried to force the hand over the objections of his colleagues. So there are these two kind of dueling petitions right now. And now the city solicitors have been drawn in here because there are certain prohibitions under state law about whether you can have a, so let's just say you were to reject one petition, then there are certain circumstances under which you could not then do a similar petition. So in the situation we're in right now, this is sort of a delicate little dance here. But I believe if they simply let the one, leave it on the table and don't act on it, then they don't run afoul of the state law. And then they can act on what I would suggest is the one that has been subject to a much more inclusive and thoughtful process. So another thing, you know, again, I hate to bore people with zoning related things, but there was a kind of an oddity a couple of weeks ago at the last regular meeting where there was a zoning petition which would allow for some additional density of housing, but not in a crazy way a la ABC. It was by a fellow named Doug Brown, but it was submitted with just one signature. And initially it was then referred to the ordinance committee and planning board. You know, and I thought that was a little odd because I thought, don't you need at least 10 registered voters that have been certified in order for a petition to sort of go into the process? And there was a misinterpretation by the city solicitor at the previous meeting, so the council voted it. So now they're in a position they have to rescind their vote because now there's been a change of opinion, and in fact, it's not enough to have one signature. Apparently, if I wanted to rezone my house, which would be ridiculous because that would be spot zoning, and that's all it was affected, I could just basically submit the petition. I didn't need any other signatures, but the Brown petition would actually affect the whole city. So, you know, I think it kind of was obvious to me a few weeks ago that that would require at least the 10 signatures. So anyway, that turned into a bit of a kerfuffle last night. You know, but hey, what can you do? One of the other oddities, you know, amongst many that I'll just mention here in the last couple of minutes of this segment, was there was this committee report from the Government Operations Committee, well, actually Government Operations Rules and Claims Committee, where, you know, the city manager had done a very nice report all about the city's boards and commissions that I think came to the city council. I don't know, it was either November or December. And so they had a committee meeting about this, and it was only now getting reported. You know, so, sure, this will be like watching paint dry. This is like nothing, right? But within the text, some of the city councilors have basically expressed some dissatisfaction that there are still some boards that do not require city council confirmation. I don't know that they were very specific about it, but I'm a little perplexed at this unquenchable desire to get control over everything, basically for the legislative body to rest the maximum amount of executive control that they possibly can. So would this mean that, for example, election commissioners, which are currently, that's, you know, the election commissioner was created under state law, not by the city charter. They would basically, as part of, they're proposing that under, they have a charter change where they would basically get approval over all these other boards and commissions. Now, whether that includes things like the license commission, the election commission, or the newly appointed traffic board, who's to say? I assume that they would include the traffic board if they had their way. But again, I just think it's something people should sort of kind of keep an eye out, because there seems to be a bit of a hunger for power that goes on here. So anyway, I think we're pretty much winding down for the first segment here. So I'll be back in a few minutes on Cambridge Inside Out.